Okay, Rabbi, so let's begin. Today is Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. Today, traditionally, is a fast day.
Really?
Yes, today is really a fast day. Today we're supposed to fast. What happened in the year? In the year 1244, I think it was?
Yeah, 1242, right.
1242 was only yesterday, if you remember. It only happened a few days. How old were we then? In the year 1242, Rachman Litzlan, a terrible event occurred. It was called the Sreifas HaTalmud. What? That we discussed Chaf Sivan. That's a whole different thing. We had a whole share on that. On Chaf Aleph Sivan, we discussed Chaf Sivan. So yeah, we had a discussion about that. But this is a different fast. This is a special fast that was established by the Jews of Paris in the year 1242. The government collected. It was a pogrom. There's a long history which I don't remember at this moment, but there was a sequence of events which led to the government seizing all of the known existing books of the Talmud, volumes of the Talmud. It was collected on approximately 40 wagons. There were thousands of manuscripts, and they were all destroyed in the town square in Paris. How many years before the printing press? Many years before the printing press. 300 years before the printing press, and it was an enormous loss for Klal Yisrael. All of the known handwritten old manuscripts of Shas, and not only the Shas, also the Mefarshim, people Rishonim who wrote commentary on the Talmud, was collected in the town square and was destroyed. The Maran Rattenberg was a young man at that time. I believe he was in his 20s. At that time, he was present. He saw this event, and it shook him to his core. Years later, he composed the famous kinnah that we recite on Tisha B'Av, Sha'ali Srufa Be'esh, where he mourns, he laments over the churban that took place in his time. This was the beginning of the end for the Jews of France. Ultimately, they were expelled not that much later, and it began a very difficult tkufa for Klal Yisrael. The Jews of France, and I'm assuming in other areas as well, this also took place after a series of debates. There was some very serious debate that took place between the Christians and the Jews as to prove that the question if the Torah is challenges anything that is against their faith. And after all of these debates, it was still a foregone conclusion that there would be this terrible event of the Sreifas HaTalmud. Now, the Sreifas HaTalmud took place on Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. I don't remember the exact date at this moment in time, exactly what day it occurred, but they asked through what's called the She'elas Chaloim. The Gedolei Yisrael at that time, these were the Rishonim, during the Maran Rattenberg, they were able to communicate with Shemayim, and they were told in the Shemayim, is there significance in what has happened for all time? And the response was the Targum of the second passage in this week's parasha, Zos Chukas HaTorah, and the response from Shemayim was Da Gezeras Oiraisa. The word Gezera has in our language a negative connotation. Gezera means a harsh decree. Da Gezeras Oiraisa. So it was established at that time of the Gedolei Yisrael that for every single year, Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas, there should be a tiny tzibur to commemorate this very great korban. This tiny tzibur is very unique among all of the fast days in that it's not connected to a specific calendar day, but instead it's anchored on a day, Erev Shabbos, of a parsha. even regardless of the exact calendar date. I don't remember the exact calendar date when it took place at that point in time, but the Tannaim observe Erev Shabbos Parashas Chukas. Commentators are very disturbed. Why? Why should it be Bedavka Erev Shabbos Parashas Chukas? I'd like to suggest a very simple reason why it's Erev Shabbos Parashas Chukas. We have a tradition that Hafeichba Dukulaba. If you study the parasha, you will find in the parasha things that relate specifically to current events. Not only do we have a tradition that you will find in each current events in the parasha, but you can break it down to the day of the week. The parasha is divided into seven parts, seven aliyos. The current events of Sunday of that week can be found in the first aliyah. The current events of Monday are the second aliyah, and Tuesday the third aliyah, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, so on and so forth. That means, now there's a makar for this. I don't know the makar, but this is what Chazal said. We are usually not able to understand, to relate current events to the parasha, because we, it's a chesaron in us, we do not know how to decipher the secrets in the Torah. But here it's not so difficult, because in this week's parasha, the event took place Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos is the sixth aliyah. What is the sixth aliyah of the parasha? Let me turn to the beginning of Shishi. Again, Shishi is the events of Friday. Vayisu b'nei shol vayachnu be'ovos. Vayisu me'ovos describes the last travels of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar. There were 42 masos. Here they're winding down, they're coming here, l'gvul arvos mo'av, the last of the 49, the last of the 42 stops before they come to Eretz Yisrael. They come to the place of Mishon Be'era. They come to Be'era, hiya Be'er. They come to Gvul Moav, and in Gvul Moav they find there Be'era, hiya Be'era. Sh'amar Hashem l'Moshe Esef Hesam v'etnu l'hamoyim the Meha Meriva. Here was the Be'er where Moshe Rabbeinu he hit the rock and did not speak to the rock. At that point in time, the parasha says, "Oz Yashir Yisrael es Hashira Hazos Ali Be'er Enula Be'er Chafru Asodim Korua Nidivei Ha'am the Be'er." That has been hewn by the princes, has been dug by the most generous of the people, to the lawgiver, the staff, the lawgiver, okay, one more pause, two more psukim, so on and so forth. They began, they sang a shir, the shir asabe'er. This is what Klal Yisrael sung when they reached the final destination in the Midbar. They're traveling for 40 years in the desert. They now come to Arvos Moav. They now come to their final resting place before they will embark to cross the Yarden to Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was gearing up to teach them Mishneh Torah. They're at the final resting place. And now before Moshe Rabbeinu begins with Mishneh Torah, Klal Yisrael on their own gets up and they sing Shira. What is the Shira? On a very simple level, the Shira is the Shira for the Be'er Miriam. The fact they've traveled 40 years in the desert, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided them with water in the desert. A desert is a place of thirst. It's arid land. There's water. So they gave Shadach V'Yodot HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you provided water for us for 40 years. That is the simplest understanding. If that is even a greater miracle than man. Because man, food, you can buy. You can buy, if you're really desperate, you can go to the neighbors and you can buy some bread, what to eat. But water? Water is not something that you can go and you can schlep enough water from the people traveling the desert. Water is something that you need naturally. You need a spring. They recognize here, we're living here for 40 years in the desert. Kadosh Baruch Hu provided for us every single day water, the Be'er. This is a very great miracle. And they sang Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the simple understanding of the Psukim. However, many of the commentators explained that the song they sang is not referenced to the water, but it's a Shira for the Torah. After 40 years traveling the desert, Moshe Rabbeinu teaching them Torah piecemeal, little by little, and now it appears they completed the Torah, and Moshe is about to review the entire Torah, Chazara, Mishneh Torah. It's basically, they made a Sim HaShas. That's really what it was. They were learning Daf Yomi, not a 7-year cycle, it was a 40-year cycle. They finished Shas, 40 years are over, Moshe Rabbeinu has now transmitted to us in the desert all of the Torah. They finished Shas, and they sang Shira. The Be'er is a mashal for Torah. Hoy kol tzami l'chul amayim. And in fact, when Moshe began to teach the Mishneh Torah, he says, Moshe, Be'er es HaTorah Hazos. Moshe used the word Be'er. Be'er means in 70 languages. It's a play on the word a well, because Torah Hoy called Samuel L'chul L'mayim. And indeed, many of the Farshim explained that the song that they sang is a song, a Shira on the Torah. Not just Shira on the Torah Shebech Sav, but primarily Shira on the Torah Shebal Peh. The Ibn Ezra writes that the Shira here is not presented. The Shira here is just the beginning of the Rosh Hashanah. It's only a few psukim. It's 1, 2, 3 psukim. That's not a Shira. A Shira, Az Yashir Moshe in the Torah, is very elaborate. There are many psukim in a Shira. There are only 3 psukim. How could it be? He says, the Shira is not here. Rav Gedalia sure explains, what does the Ibn Ezra mean when he says the Shira is not here? Because this Shira was on Torah Shebal Peh. And the nature of Torah Shebal Peh is not to be put in writing. And Rav Gedalia sure explains, that's why there's no Ariach al Gabi Levein. Chazal tell us all of the Shiras in the Torah are written either Ariach al Gabi Levein, or they're written like Hazinu, where it's Ariach al Gabi Ariach, or Levein al Gabi Levein. There's a style of writing Shira. Here we have a Shira, Oz Yashir Yisrael. You can't tell. It's not a Shira, it's a Shira. It's only 3 psukim, and yet there's no special writing. All the letters are put together, there is no separation. The answer is, Rav Gedalia Yeshur, based on Ibn Ezra, another Mefarshim, is the Shira here, and the Or Chaim says this in very great detail, that the Shira here was a Shira on the completion of the Torah. They were Messiahim Kolot HaRakul after 40 years. They're about to review the Torah with Mishnah Torah. They're giving Shira for the Torah, and it's not just the Torah Shebechsav, they're giving Shira for the Torah Shebal Peh. And the Shira, being that it's Torah Shebal Peh, just like Torah Shebal Peh, Dvarim Shebal Peh, it's also to put in writing. The Shira is not to be put in writing, because it's a Shira, just like Torah Shalop has not put in writing, the Shira for Torah Shalop has not put in writing. And the best the Torah gives us is just Rosh Prakim, the beginning of the Shira, or Rosh Prakim, but the depth of the Shira and the full text of the Shira is hidden from us, and that's why he doesn't have to follow the rules of Ariach Rabbi Levena or like Hazinu, because we're not actually giving you the entire text, we're just giving you the Rosh Prakim. They came here to a great appreciation of a moment in time. This is a very holy moment in time where Klal Yisrael came to appreciation of the chashivas of Torah. When this Torah's Talmud was nisraf, what was destroyed? Torah Shebech Sav was not destroyed. When in Paris in 1242, when they collected all of the Sfarim, they didn't burn the Torah Shebech Sav. Torah Shebech Sav the Christians had. They had the Old Testament. They specifically were focused on Torah Shebal Peh, the Talmud, Bavli, Talmud, Yerushalmi, and all of the Mefarshim. 40 wagons of Torah Shebal Peh. And it was destroyed. It was destroyed on Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas is the sixth Aliyah of Parshas Chukas. The sixth Aliyah of Parshas Chukas is the moment in time when Klal Yisrael, in the history of Klal Yisrael, it's one of the greatest moments in the history of Klal Yisrael, where Klal Yisrael came to an appreciation, a full appreciation of what Torah Shebal Peh means for Klal Yisrael. After 40 years in the desert, after learning Torah Shebal Peh, they on their own, Mefarshim take note that it does not say Oz Yosher Moshe Uvenei Yisrael Es Hashira Hazos Ali Berenula. It says Oz Yosher Yisrael. They didn't need Moshe. Klal Yisrael on their own was so uplifted. On their own, they broke forth spontaneously in song to Kadosh Baruch Hu to appreciate the Torah. In the year 1492, Hakadosh Baruch Hu sent a message. 1242. In 1242, Hakadosh Baruch Hu sent a message. Da Gzeira De Oraisa. There's a problem in Klal Yisrael. There's a lack of appreciation for there's a lack of appreciation for the Torah of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael have sunk to a level where there's a tzia, and we do know that the burning of the Talmud took place in the same exact spot where years ago Jews themselves burnt the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim and other works of the Rambam. There was sinas chinam. There was terrible sinas chinam. People were upset that the Rambam he condoned the study of philosophy. Mor Nevuchim, and they challenged the Rambam, and one thing led to another. What started out maybe as a dispute of respect turned into an ugly, got out of hand to a machlokes where there was a very great chilul Hashem. One thing led to the other, and on the same spot where years ago the people burnt the works of the Rambam was where the government, the secular government, the Christians had burnt the Talmud and brought about a terrible chain of events which led to the Jews being expelled from France and from other parts of the world, and started a long process of deeper a deeper galus than we had until that point in time. This is not so much long after the First and Second Crusade, where Klal Yisrael was still suffering the aftermath of that event, but this sent us even further into exile, into different lands, which created new problems. So there is a logic as to why specifically the Tainus is today. Because today is Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas is the sixth Aliyah, and the sixth Aliyah is the most beautiful psukim in the Torah, the Shira that Klal Yisrael spontaneously sung on their own after 40 years of learning Torah under Moshe. Ali be'er enulah. It's not even a complete shir, it's just the Rosh HaProkim, as Ibn Eber says, because this is a shir for Torah Shabbal Peh, and Torah Shabbal Peh, we appreciate Torah Shabbal Peh. And if Chas V'Shalom is a tkufa in the history of Klal Yisrael, and the Klal Yisrael in there not appreciating Torah Shabbal Peh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Toivea, the covenant of Torah Shabbal Peh, and that happened in a very great way, a very large way, on this day, on this tkufa of Erev Shabbos Parash Chukas, when the Torah Shabbal Peh was taken away from us to some degree in this horrible event. It wasn't abolished. It's just that I'm sure there are people today that are fasting. I'm sure you go to Eretz Yisrael, you can find Yechidim. You find Yechidim that are fasting today. People that are in the know, fast. People today, we're very weak. We're very weak. It's very hard for us to fast. Yesterday was a very big day. I spoke to someone in Eretz Yisrael. Yes, in Eretz Yisrael was it's Yom Kippur Katan. Yom Kippur Katan, Rosh Chodesh is tomorrow, Shabbos. So therefore, Yom Kippur, you can't have Yom Kippur Katan on Friday. It's pushed back one day. And being that the Matzav is very sad, very dire with regard to the three boys that have been kidnapped, yesterday was a very big day of tefillah. Many people who otherwise would not observe Yom Kippur Katan observe Yom Kippur Katan yesterday. So I'm sure people that are in this. So we unfortunately live in a very small, very cloister, live a little shtetl here. But there's a whole world out there, and there are definitely people that are observing today as a tainus for. But the point I want to make is, yet to appreciate the tainus, you have to appreciate the event. You have to appreciate these psukim of Oz, Yashir, Yisrael, Ashir, Hazos, Ali, Be'er, and Nula. Okay, let's go to another idea. This week's parasha, we learn about the chait of the Neha Meriva. Moshe Rabbeinu, he hit the rock. He called Klal Yisrael, Shimonu Hamirim, Hamenasel Hazed, Notzilachim Moim. From this rock, am I going to produce water? You'll see that the water will come forth from this rock. He called Klal Yisrael rebels, and he hit the rock, and because of that sin, he was denied entry into Eretz Yisrael. So all the Farshim is the question, just because Moshe hit the rock, he was denied. What is the depth of the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu? Back in Parshas Beshalach, Moshe Rabbeinu, he hit the rock. Hashem told him to hit the rock. He hit the rock, and water came out. So here, Hashem told Moshe to speak to the rock. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu also told Moshe, take the matah. Take the matah, which also seemed to be an indication that you should hit the rock. And just because Moshe Rabbeinu did something on his own, it's not the first time Moshe did something on his own. Moshe shattered the luchos. For shattering the luchos, Hashem said to him, Yasher koyach shashibarta. Asher shibarta. Yasher shibarta. Moshe Rabbeinu was moisef yemecha midaita. Hashem said, Matar is going to be vav sivan. Moshe says, it's cancelled. Or it's delayed, postponed, one more day. Moshe often did things on his own. So even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to speak to the rock, just because Moshe deviated, he hit the rock, is that really a reason why Moshe Rabbeinu should be punished to such a large degree that he should be denied entry to Eretz Yisrael? What exactly is the nature of the sin? So I saw this idea, what I'm telling you now. So what is the nature of the Chilul Hashem? It's a very difficult question, and any answer you give does not fully satisfy the question. But why is it a Chilul Hashem? That's the question. What is the nature of the Chilul Hashem? So I want to tell you an answer which I feel is a conglomerate of many mafarshim. They say pretty much the same thing, but I just want to put them together in this way. There are really two. There are two things that appear here in this week's Parashat Chukas that have already appeared in Parashas Beshalach. Number one, the Shira. In Parashas Beshalach, they cross the Yamsuf. Oz Yashir Moshe Vnei Yisrael Shira Zos. A very elaborate Shira, beautiful Shira. In this week's Parasha, we have another significant Shira. Ali Be'er Oz Yashir Yisrael Ali Be'er Nula. Parash Beshalach, Moshe Rabbeinu, there was no water. They came out of the Kriyas Yamsuf. There was no water. Moshe Rabbeinu, he comes to the rock. He hits the rock. Water comes out. In this week's Parasha, Moshe again, he hits the rock and water comes out. Two events happen in Parash Beshalach. and happen in Parshas Chukas. With regard to one, everything is fine and good. The Shira is fine and good. But when we come to the hitting of the rock, all of a sudden we find a major difference. What's the difference? I want to the difference perhaps lies, well, it's not my own idea, in analyzing in the difference of the Shira. The first Shira at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf was led by Moshe Rabbeinu. Oz Yashir Moshe Uvene Yisrael Shira Zos. By Yom Ulemar. The Shir in Parshas Chukas was said by Moshe himself, by Klal Yisrael themselves. Moshe Rabbeinu did not need to lead them in Shira. On their own, spontaneously, they rose up to sing Shira after Moshe finished teaching them Kol HaTorah Kula, after traveling 40 years in the desert, when they reached their final destination, Arva Smol, right before they're going to cross the Yarden, on their own. Klal Yisrael have matured in 40 years. There was a beautiful event took place. Whereas when they left Mitzrayim, Klal Yisrael was like an infant. They needed a mother to guide them, to teach them what to do. Klal Yisrael, when they crossed Yam Suf, it seems they would not have been moved to sing Shira. Moshe Rabbeinu had to compose the Shira, had to inspire them to sing the Shira, had to teach them to say how to sing the Shira. Oz Yashir Moshe. It's now 40 years later. The greatest nachas that Moshe Rabbeinu could have as a leader for Klal Yisrael is to see that, look at my people after 40 years. Look how they have matured, how they have developed, where now I don't need to tell them to sing Shira. On their own, they have enough understanding to sing Shira. I don't have to put the words in their mouth. They themselves compose the words. Ali be'erenula. I think our friend, he writes about this. He writes about this in very beautiful terms. How Klal Yisrael over 40 years, look how they have matured. This is the greatest nachas a leader can have, a greatest nachas a parent can have, to see how his people have matured on to such exalted levels. Therefore, that was the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Maybe when he came out of Egypt, people needed to be hit. A child you hit. Not anymore today. Today you hit a child, you go to jail. But it used to be in the olden days, you hit children. That's the way it was. But when a person becomes an adult, a 25-year-old, parents don't hit a 25-year-old. You speak to them, and you speak softly. By speaking to an adult, you can have even a greater effect on the person than hitting a child. Child doesn't understand language, doesn't understand what you have to hit him. He only understands punishment, but a mature adult understands language. Moshe Rabbeinu should have realized, look how far Klal Yisrael have gone. They've gone from people who needed to be taught how to sing, how to say thank you, to people who on their own can express thank you with beautiful words. They're mature adults. A mature adult, you don't have to hit. A mature adult, you speak. Moshe Rabbeinu, it was the hitting was the right thing when they left Egypt, to hit the rock, to show power and force. But now at this point in time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, speak to the rock. It wasn't just telling, speak to the rock. He was telling, speak to the people. People, the Yetzirah is one of the terms Chazal used to describe. A rock is one of the terms Chazal used to describe the Yetzirah. If the Yetzirah is like a stone, you pour upon him some Torah and it will dissolve. It's speak to the rock means speak to their Yetzirah. When they left Egypt, hit the rock. Give them some physical abuse. Beat the Yetzirah out of them when you came out of Mitzrayim. Now, when they're rebelling, they're demanding water. They're mature adults. They know how to sing Shira. If they are stubborn, they're showing signs of a rock, meaning the Yetzirah is manifest. Speak to them. You could have a much greater effect. That is the nature of the Chil Hashem, the demand that Kadosh Baruch Hu has upon Moshe Rabbeinu, why it was such a great chait, and Moshe Rabbeinu was denied entry into Eretz Yisrael.
The kasha is still there in terms of why.
The kasha will always be there.
Why the punishment was so severe.
The kasha will always be there.
Moderate that he answered.
Yeah.
Exactly. That he said it's the difference between an os and a mo face.
Yeah.
When he hit the rock, he hit a rock. So that's a tremendous thing at the time. But they had experience hitting the rock already. Now they needed an even
greater miracle. They developed.
You could explain hitting the rock, but he uses it before it was tzur. Now it's selah. Selah is a connotation of a huge boulder blocking maybe a mountain stream. So maybe they thought maybe Moshe understood where to hit the rock, so it dislodged and opened up a mountain stream. As opposed to, but if you talk to a rock, there's no way in the world you could explain through any kind of other than supernatural from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that if you look at the rock and just say, rock, give me water. There's no way to explain that. So that was Yan Lo Hemanta Bilahakti Shani. Now, nobody could even have a Havamina to say that it wasn't a miracle. What I had added to that was that Bnei Yisrael will grow. Why did this have to happen? Because Bnei Yisrael grew up in a time that the whole generation now, the Dor HaMidbar, was dead. All these people that were left had grown up in a world where they got water from a rock, they got man from the heaven, and everything, their clothing grew with them, and they had nothing to do. They needed something greater. This was common occurrence to them. Now they needed something greater that they had never experienced, talking to the rock. And Moshe blew the opportunity to pass that on to them.
This was a thing. The Rambam held that a Kadosh Baruch was angry at this time. And he brings from the Pasuk, right?
Yeah, of course the Kadosh Baruch was angry.
You know, they complained. So what you're saying is Hashem was saying, talk to them smoothly. The Ramban says, I don't know, that he was really angry. And he brings from the Pasuk this, right before he spoke to them, he says, Vayir Kavod Hashem Alayim.
Well, of course their Hashem was angry, but there's a different way to deal. The way when you get angry at adults, just like you get angry at children, there's a different way to deal with an adult than with a child. And being that Klal Yisrael have matured, the proof that they have matured, maybe you see the point that we're making is that maybe they didn't mature. 40 years is 40 years. Nothing has changed over 40 years. No, there's a very big difference over the 40 years. And the proof, the strongest proof that they have matured over 40 years is, look at the Shira 40 years ago versus the Shira today. That shows a very sophisticated degree of maturity. And therefore, the same way they've matured in that manner, the way you rebuke the people is also has to be on a different level. Because you can argue, 40 years, nothing like one day, nothing ever happened, it's more of the same. It's not more of the same. So let's go to another idea. We have here in this parasha, in the Berevi, in the middle of the parasha, Klal Yisrael, they're traveling in the desert, and they come across Edom. Vayishlach Moshe Malachim, Moshe sends messengers, Mikodesh El Melech Edom, Koyem Arachicha Yisrael, Ato Yadati Iskol Hatalasher Mitzosnu, you know, difficulty. And basically, he goes on to say, he repeats some of the Jewish history, and he says, we want to pass through your land. Nabro Novi Artsecha. We have a destination, we're traveling to the Holy Land, and to travel to the Holy Land, we need to pass through your land. Please, let us pass Nabro No. Moshe is very nice. Levi Artsecha. We're not going to go walk through the fields and the vineyards. We're not going to cause any damage. We're not going to consume your resources, your natural resources. That's a simple interpretation of the pasuk. We're going to travel on the interstate, on the highway, King's Highway. We're not going to make any trouble. We're not going to damage the roads. We're not going to turn. This is where it comes from. We're not going to turn. How does Edom respond? Edom was not very happy with this arrangement. Don't you dare come. Okay, fine. Bnei Yisrael says, we'll go by Mesila. We won't go through the main lane. We'll go along a side road. We'll take the service road. Rak ein davar baraglai avora. No. Vayomer loy savar. Don't you dare pass through the land. Vayetse Edom likrosob yam kaved v'chazaka. They came out to war. Okay, fine. So Klal Yisrael, they got on a different road and they steered clear of Edom. Mefarshim point out, Maisa avo similar one. Edom represents the goal is that we are in now. We know there are Dalet Malchios, We start with Bavel, we then go to Yavon, I'm sorry, for Parsimodai, Yavon, and then we come to Golus Edom. The Golus that we're in today from the time of Luchum Bai Hasheni for the last almost 2,000 years is Golus Edom. Chazal tell us, whatever happened, appears in the Torah, is Mais Avasim Labanim. When it says here that Moshe sent messengers to Melech Edom, we want to pass Eber Novi Artsecha, Moshe Rabbeinu. This is Moshe Rabbeinu was preparing Klal Yisrael. There's going to come a point in time when there's going to be a Golus Edom, and you're going to travel through the lands of the Goyim. You're going to travel through America, you'll travel through the lands of Europe. You're going to travel temporarily through the lands of Edom until you reach your final destination with the coming of Mashiach, coming to the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. And Moshe Rabbeinu is telling Klal Yisrael, he's not just speaking to Edom, asking Edom, do us a favor, let us live in your land, let us pasture your land. The audience is Klal Yisrael. And he's also addressing Klal Yisrael that when you come to this Kufa, these 2,000 years, when you're going to pass through the land, let me tell you how to live in Golus. And my message to you is, when you live in Golus, the first thing is, Loi nishte, loi navar bisodeu v'chem. Don't pass through the fields and the vineyards. Loi nishte mei ve'er. And don't drink mei ve'er. Derech hamelech nelech, lo nite yominu smol. Arasher navar bigvulach. On a very, very, very simple level, he's telling Klal Yisrael, don't get comfortable in Golus. When you travel through the land of Edom, which again is alluding, Mais of a similar button, when you travel through Golus Edom, don't get too comfortable. Don't live in the Sode uvecherem, in the good lands, in the vineyards, and get deeply entrenched in the culture of the land. Lo nite yominu smol, don't start being swayed to go to the right and to the left. Just pass through the land in an open area safely until you reach your destination. Now, there's a very important limud here I want to bring out. There's a fascinating Rashi. It says here in the Pasuk, we will not drink the water of the Ve'er. And a very simple understanding of these words, a very simple translation of these words mean that we're not going to deplete your resources. You have reservoirs that you need for your country. We have here 3 million people strong passing through your land. If we drink the Meva air, there'll be nothing left for you. You know what we're not going to do? We have canteens. We have the air of Miriam. We'll fill up before we come pass through the land, and we won't ruin, we won't have any effect. There'll be no environmental effect on your land. But that's not what Rashi says. Rashi says here is a very powerful Musar Haskel for how to live in Golus. Rashi says, "Leinishta mei ve'er, mei voirois hayot sarich lomar." It's grammatically incorrect. Ve'er is singular. When you pass through the land of Edom, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of wells, of reservoirs. Pasuk should say, "Leinishta mei." Voirois, in the plural. That's what it should say. This is Rashi's question. Meaning Rashi. Ella kach oma Moshe. This is an incredible Rashi. Af al pi sheyesh biyodeinu mon lechol. We have in our possession mon. Every single day the mon falls. Ube'er lishtos. And traveling with us through the desert is the mar, the Be'er Miriam. Miraculously, the Be'er Miriam followed, trailed Klal Yisrael through the desert. Loi nishte mimenu. We will not drink from the Be'er. And we're not going to eat the mon. Elo, we're going to enhance your economy. We will buy food. We will buy water. Elenikne mikem oichel umayim lehanoschem, for your benefit. So look what this is amazing what it says here. Klal Yisrael are eating mon. The mon is the real deal, right? The mon is the lechem abirim. Today, if mon was available, who wouldn't pay, give up everything they have just to have a taste of mon? Klal Yisrael says that when we pass through your land, no matter how long it takes, whether it takes months, takes years, we're not going to eat the mon. We're going to be mevater on the gift of the lechem abim, the lechem of the angels, for this period of time. We're going to buy your fashtunken bread. right? Your stale bread that grows in Edom that's polluted. Who knows? It's polluted. It's unhealthy. It's not good for the environment. But you'll have benefits. We'll pay you a few dollars. We'll pay you a few dollars. We'll buy bread. You'll be happy. It'll be a boost for your economy. Water will buy your bottled water. And we'll give up the purity and the blessing of the Be'er Miriam. Be'er Miriam, we have to assume that it's magical properties, spiritual properties. We're going to be mevater on our ruchnius in order to be mahane, our host country. So on a very similar level, this is a very powerful limud musar, is that when Klal Yisrael, the golos of Edom, when we, this is my son, when we travel to Edom, we are commanded to participate in, Moshe Rabbeinu was giving instructions to Klal Yisrael that when you come, you should participate in society. You be careful. It's a very difficult, tight wire, very difficult balance. On the one hand, don't live in the Sodom and Chedem. Don't get overwhelmed. Don't get swept up in their culture. Don't need to yamenu small. Just stay in the middle road. But derech hamelech. Don't be inclined to follow, be pulled after the influence by their culture. But on the other hand, don't participate. Be mahane the country that you live in. Be good. Be good. Contribute. Contribute in a positive way to your host country. Purchase from them, even at your expense. Even though you have your own means, you have the mon and you have the Be'er Miriam, and you can be selfish and you don't have to be mahane. If they're your host, you have an obligation. Like, you know, there's a bracha that used to be said in all the years, the bracha for the Shlom HaMedina. Not talking about the Medina Yisrael. I'm talking about the secular government. That is the time in, from time immemorial, not talking that, that's something that was said all the time to bless your host country, provided it. But there's something even deeper. And what's deeper is, what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Klal Yisrael is, when you travel in Golis, don't display openly your Jewishness. Meaning, this is what it says, you have mon, you have the mon, and you have the be'er. Hide it. It's not for public knowledge. The mon is lechem abirim, spiritual food. And you have, when you live among goyim, now of course it has to be, that doesn't mean you don't wear a yarmulke, doesn't mean, what?
It's within limits.
Within limits. But it means don't flaunt your Jewishness. You have the mon, the spiritual qualities of the mon. You have the Be'er Miriam. Keep it to yourself, Klal Yisrael. When you travel through the lands, like exactly, they'll get jealous. They're not going to like it. It's a clash with their culture. Be Jewish, no question about it. No, it used to be years ago, Yaakov Kamenetsky was very against people wearing a talis in the street on Shabbos. He felt that you're a Gingolus. It's not what you do today. It doesn't seem that's not the custom anymore. Today we live, it's a whole different culture today. In Golus, in Chutz La'aretz. Golus. So this is, I believe, a very powerful Limud Musar, a derech in Moshe Rabbeinu. We have here in this parsha, there are a lot more hints in this parsha, a derech, a guide for the perplexed, a guide for Galus. When it says here they're about to pass through Edom, the end was they didn't pass. Edom didn't allow. No, that's mitzad Edom. Edom didn't want. But Moshe Rabbeinu still addressed Klal Yisrael in regard to how it's going to happen. Why didn't I even report this? Let me ask you a question. If this whole event was not recorded altogether and was only in a medrash, would you have any bad feelings? You wouldn't even know it belonged in the Torah. There's a medrash that says that Klal Yisrael, they were traveling in the desert, they wanted to pass to the land of Edom, and Edom said no. Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to negotiate a whole package deal with them, and they said no. You wouldn't blink. Why did the Torah find it necessary to tell us an event that never came to fruition, to our plan? We're about to travel, we want to go to the land of Edom, Moshe comes and sees them, Nabinov Yartzecha, let us pass through your land, and we're not going to go to the right, the left, we're going to go to the Hamelech, and we're not going to drink from the Nebe'er, and Rashi teaches, what does it mean, the Nebe'er? It doesn't mean we're not going to drink from the Be'er Miriam, and which also means we're not going to eat the Mon. Why is it necessary for the Torah to tell us this, especially especially when the end is, Edom says, "Vayomer lo safer bi, don't come." Vayetz Edom lekros biyam kolor yad chazaka. Vayimor Edom um nesonet shalavor bikvulo vayeyis shomay alaf. We would never have even known this happened. Why is it presented? The answer is because Moshe Rabbeinu was preparing Klal Yisrael not just for passing through this land in the desert. He's preparing Klal Yisrael for Golos Edom, and in Golos Edom we're going to go. It's going to happen. It's going to be 2,000 years of traveling through the land of Edom. Whether it's France, whether it's Spain, whether it's Germany, whether it's America, and any other part of the world. We're going to pass through the lands of Edom. And Moshe Rabbeinu is coming and giving us instructions. When you pass the land of Edom, just stay on the Derech HaMelech. Stay on, and what Chazal in the term, what does it mean, Melech, Derech HaMelech? The Melech Malchei Hamlochim. Focus on the path of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Leinite yamin u'smol. Don't live in the good, the sod, and the kerem, what the land has to offer. You'll be swept up in their culture before you'll blink. You'll be assimilation, and you'll be wiped out, and you'll find yourself in a lot of trouble. And not only that, Rashi says, negotiate, be good to your country. Be mispalo for the Shleim HaMedina. Be mispalo for them. Rashi says, we're not going to eat. We have man and we have a bear Miriam, but we're not going to take advantage. We're going to buy. We're going to enhance your economy. And we're also not going to flaunt our religiousness. We're not going to show we're Jewish. We have demands. We have entitlements. We're going to hide the man. We're going to be mevater. We're going to hide the bear Miriam. We're going to behave like everyone else because we're just here temporarily on the Derech HaMelech Ad Navar until we reach our final destination. This is a blueprint how to behave in Golos.
So would Moshe Rabbeinu,
what's good for one person, you cannot generalize. What's good for one person is not good for another person. What's good for one tkufa, we don't know. Listen, you can't question. I don't know the answer. You can't generalize. It's too simplified. You can't generalize. What's good for one person is not good for someone else. What's good for one tkufa is not good for someone else. We know that each mahalach has milos and chesronos. The chesronos of being a ghetto life is you're not contributing to society, and you're not learning, you're not elevating what society has to offer for avodas Hashem. The chesaron of living an open life, there's a very great risk of assimilation. We all know that to be true. So each one has milos and chesaronos, and there's no perfect solution. Okay, let's go to another idea.
We are not man, we have money, and we should hide our money under the table, not to show the goys.
Okay, let's go. Not everyone has money, I'm sorry to tell you. Not everyone has money. Halavai. Okay, what? Yeah. Okay, let's now go to another quick idea. This idea, in the beginning of the parasha, we have the word Zeis Chukas Satoira. The parasha Paradum, parasha Paraduma is all about Tahara, purity. There's one other place in the Torah where the expression Zos Chukas HaTorah appears. That is in Parshas Matos with regard to Hagolas Kalim. If one has utensils that have been used by non-Jews, it has absorbed non-kosher substance. It has to be purged. It has to be cleansed by putting it through fire or hagola, pouring it, immersing it in boiling hot water to purge the utensil from its, not its tumah, from its tarfus, its non-kosher substance. There are two places in the Torah we have the expression Zos Chukas HaTorah. This is the law of the Torah. Here in regard to tumah v'tahara, purity, a person is contaminated, he's spiritually impure, he needs to be purified. Go to mikvah, hazah, day 3, day 7, to remove from himself any form of contamination. And then later in Parshas Matos, if a utensil is absorbed, tarfus, it has to be purged. What is the Musa, the Limud Musa? What is the common denominator of these two parashios? And why is it only with regard to these two does the Torah use this all-encompassing word? This is the law of the Torah. It's to teach us. Many parashim say this in different ways. Is to say, this is the nature of Torah. In other words, a person can study Torah, can learn dafyomi, can claim all the mitzvos, and yet be a novel bereshus haTorah. You can do everything 100% correctly, but not have any flavor of Yiddishkeit. The litmus test, if a person is being mekayim the mitzvos, l'shem shemayim, and is accomplishing what the Torah set out to him, as if he has accomplished what the Torah sets out in these two parashios. Zos chukas haTorah, parashas chukas, and the parashas matos. If Torah achieves purity, tahara, purity, both spiritually and to some degree physically, person doesn't have in his home, in his mind, is not filled with things which are improper. He has purged from his neshama and from his guf things that are improper. This is the law of the Torah. This is what the Torah has set out to accomplish. But if Rachmana Lislan, a person, finds himself being the kind of the Torah, learning daf yomi and that 3 times a day, and yet he knows that he's not living the way he's supposed to be living, this is not what is the chukas haTorah. It's a very simple idea, but it's very has a lot of depth. Okay, let's go to another quick idea. I saw this from Rabbi Yashav. It's a very simple point, but it's very deep. Rabbi Yashav asked the question, why is it that with regard to Paraduma, Chazal went to such extreme chumras to respond to the Tzedokim? The Tzedokim were of the opinion that Parah Adumah can only be prepared by a person who had sunset, who had Harav Shemesh. In other words, he went to the mikvah, a person is Tamei, he went to the mikvah, and the sun set. It's after Tzeis HaKacham. 3 medium stars have come out. He went to mikvah, let's say, 9 o'clock in the morning. He's now tar. After going to mikvah, his primary tumah has departed, he still retains some residual degree of tumah until 3 stars come out. This was Geshavis. This was the opinion of the Tzedokim, of the opinion that such a person is not fit to prepare the Parah Adumah. A person, a candidate for Parah Adumah, must be 100% pure. In addition to going to mikvah, you also need time to pass. Time must pass until 3 medium stars come out. Harav Shemesh. The Rabbanim, the Prushim, disagreed. They dash from the pasuk based upon the drasha that the Parah Adumah can be done even by a person that did not yet have Harav Shemesh, as long as he has gone to the mikvah and he has removed the primary form of tumah, even though he's still begeder sheni until it comes evening, you are fit to offer the Parah Adumah. So it comes out that the Tzedokim are more machmir than the Prushim. They're more machmir. So what did the Rabbanim do? The Rabbanim said, we're going to show up the Tzedokim. We're going to bedafka go and prepare the Parah Adumah by a person who did not have Harav Shemesh. But in order people in the community should not get the wrong message, should not be misled to think, to be mezalzel in the din of Tumah v'Tahara, we're going to the other extreme, and we're going to require the people that prepared the Parah Adumah to live in special cities from the time they were born, and to do all of these strange things. We have a special bridge for them, and whole very complicated procedure in order not to send the wrong message to people, that even though we're going to be lenient with regard to preparing by a person who's a tful yom, in order not to make, we're going to do other things to compensate for that. So the question is, someone asked him, why do the Rabbanim care so much what the Tzedokim say? That Tzedokim, they're every Meshugana that says something you have to take seriously. The Tzedokim are of the opinion Tful Yom, that you can prepare the Parah Adumah with a person that's a Tful Yom. So the Tzedokim, they're just they're Yechidim. They're not mainstream.
They're a fringe group.
They're a fringe group. So they say something, we have to go take them so seriously. We have to deal with them. And we have to bedafka be metame the person, so it should be a tful yom. And now because of the metame, we have to go compensate. Who cares about that Tzedokim?
But they were the dominant force at the time.
So on a very simple answer, but they weren't in control. They were a dominant force, but they weren't in control. The proof is, no. No, they were suspected as being secret Tzedokim, but they were not the dominant force. The ones that were in control at all times were the Prushims. So being that they call the shots, so why did Chazal have to take the tzedakim, take them seriously? Because you want to argue, you can argue, it's a good argument, is that they were a significant force. They were a real danger, so indeed we had to take them. Rav Schwab, Rav Yashar has another very powerful idea, and he said this idea in the applications in modern life. When someone is machmir, then you got to watch out. In other words, if the tzedakim, so it's very true. If you have a fringe group out there, right, online, and new group forms, and they make kilim, open orthodoxy. Okay, they make kilim. You can do this. You can do this. You can do this. Everything goes. Okay, you could, to a certain degree, a person wants to be makel. You're already showing your true colors. You're showing that you want to break away. You're looking. You don't have to worry that much. They're a threat. You don't have to deal with them heads on. But when someone tries to undermine Yadus by showing you that they're firmer, I'm more machmer. We'll be more machmer and sneers. We're going to do things that were never done before. We're going to do things chumris. We're going to create new chumris and halacha that were never done before. This is a real danger. Because it is the nature of Klal Yisrael to look for chumras. That was Matan Torah was Hafrasha. Hafrasha was the mitzvah that Hashem gave Klal Yisrael before Matan Torah was Prisha. Don't come too close. Stay away. Don't try to come and attach yourself to the mountain. Stand down. Stand back. Go back to your mundane existence. Don't try to become too religious. When you have a group of people that are machnirim, they're saying, paraduma, tahara, it only can be done by a person that's 100% tahar. That's a real danger. Because people like to hear that. People like to attach themselves to people that are machmir. Oh, this is the real thing. I'm not on that madrega of tahara, but I'm going to the Rebbe, because the Rebbe, he's more machmir. There's something to it. It's very enticing. He can bring a salvation because he's more machmir. When you have a group that's a bunch of frauds that's stoken, and now they're practicing chumras, Chazal took this very seriously. And therefore, they bedafka. They did extreme things that they didn't do with other fringe groups that existed in these historic times. These times, they paraduma, bedafka by a person that's not tame, that's not tar, that's partially tame. And in order to show up that we're also machmir, you want to learn about chumras? We'll teach you how to be machmir. We'll compensate. We'll show you. Want to be machmir? The children should be raised, al taras hakodesh, shall be raised in special cities. There's something to that also. Children, the chumras should be done for the young folk. The children, al taras hakodesh. We'll teach you how to be machmir. Don't look to the Mishagoyim to learn how to be machmer. And obviously this has a lot of very, very important applications in our day and age, where we always find new people coming up with new chumras. To put a machitz in an elevator, I think really shook up a lot of people. Mechitza in an elevator, right? Mechitza in an elevator. They put a mechitza in a one car elevator. In the elevator, you go into the elevator, there's a mechitza. Men on the left. Okay, one more last short var. Something to think about. The last. Okay, last part for the parasha. Paraduma, we have the famous, very quickly, the story of Dama ben Asina. The story about, everyone knows the story of Dama ben Asina. Dama ben Asina had in his possession a stone, a valuable stone that was in for the Choshen. The Klal Yisrael was willing to pay him an enormous amount of money. Problem, it was time sensitive. They could have got the stone from someone else. And they went to Dama ben Asina and they told them, you have a stone, if you're not going to give it to us, we're going to go somewhere else. He says, yes, I do have the stone, but the key to the stone is locked underneath my father's pillow. Very strange relationship. Everyone says, you know, if it was me, I would tell them, wake me up. I mean, dealing with what father wouldn't want his son to become a multimillionaire? But for whatever reason, they didn't have a good relationship, and the son said, I'm not going to wake up my father. He's sleeping under the pillow. I'm not going to wake up. And Dama ben Asina, by doing so, he forfeited an enormous amount of money. So what happened the following year? So this was a kidrug on Klal Yisrael. What was kidrug on Klal Yisrael? Look how much a guy, Dub and Asina and Ashlin was a non-Jew. He was mechabit his father. He showed for his father great respect. He did not want to disturb his sleep, even though it cost him a hoin raf. What happened? It was a kidrug on Klal Yisrael. So Hashem wanted to make it up. There shouldn't be a problem. The Malach came a year later. It was born to him. He was rewarded. Dub and Asina. A para aduma was born to Dom and Asina, and it was purchased for a fortune. So what do Chazal say? We are willing to spend an enormous amount of money for a para aduma, which is a mitzvah which does not make any sense. But a guy, the most they're willing to do is for kibud av aim, which is logical. It's even if the Torah did not tell us kibud av aim, we would anyway mechaber our parents because they are the ones who brought us into this world. That is the similar understanding between the relationship between the para. To Paraduma as a reward for Dom and Asina. Dom and Asina was Mekayim a mitzvah sichlius, a mitzvah which makes sense. Klal Yisrael was willing to expend an enormous amount of money for every mitzvah, even a mitzvah which is the opposite extreme, which does not make sense. That is a very popular approach to explain. I want to present to you another approach. Do we ever find by a non-Jew giving kavod to his grandfather? No such thing. By a non-Jew, the most cover we find is a child to a father. What about the grandfather? The son said, you can make a very strong argument, that's for my father to do. I don't have to even have my grandfather. My father brought me into this world. I'm not responsible to go back a generation before. A generation before is not my duty. That's the previous generations. That is their duty. We don't find such a concept. By Klal Yisrael, what? What?
Where does this come from?
We don't have any makor otherwise. We don't find the Chazal and Chazal praise. We don't find the source. Yeah, we don't find the source. The Chazal, when we find the Chazal, far we find that goyim are mechabed their parents. We don't have any makor for children giving honor for the grandparents. By Klal Yisrael, we have a concept by Matan Torah. It says Vaydatim levonecha ulevnei vonecha. Matan Torah, even though the mitzvah of kibud av aim does not extend to the grandfather, because the Torah only says kabedas lirich v'yasimecha, yet the Torah makes it clear as day that there is a mitzvah. There is a child. There is a connection to the grandparents. There is a connection between the grandparent and the granddad. By extension, once we go already break the next generation, we go to up to a grandfather, by extension, there's a Messiah. There's something called tradition. Every person is one, every generation before us is one step closer to the previous generation. We go further back. In the laws of Tumah V'Tahara, we find a very interesting concept. We find something called Avi Avos HaTumah. And then there's an Av HaTumah. And then there's a Rishon LaTumah. And a Sheni. And then when it comes to Truma, there's a Shlishi. And when it comes to Kachem, there's a Revi. The laws of Tumah bring with it the Ad, the mace itself is the Avi Avos. Is the source of Tumah, which is called Avi Avos, the grandfather. Someone that comes in contact with the dead, he entered Oil HaMeis, so you touch the dead, you will become an Av HaTumah, primary form of Tumah. Touch another person, he becomes a Rishon. He touches food, it's a Sheni. Truma becomes a Shlishi. Kachem can become a Revi. There are five generations. A concept of generations of, you have to look back, further, trace the lineage of the Tumah, and see where the Tumah comes from. Dama ben Asina was mechabit his father. Dama ben Asina was a non-Jew. He represents all non-Jews. And they taught the world, the person has to appreciate where you come from. I come from this person. He brought me into this world. I owe him. I have to be mechabit. If it's going to disturb his sleep, I'm not going to disturb his sleep to my benefit. I'm going to forfeit an enormous amount of money in order to give honor to where I come from. But we don't find among the non-Jews the ability or the desire to go back more than one generation. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to save us by showing that this should not serve as a kitrik for Klal Yisrael, he contrasted the kibud av aim ben Asina with the laws of Tumah V'Tahara. Para Aduma. The laws of Tumah v'Tahara are the halacha in the Torah where it brings forth the concept. It's not just one generation. There's more than one generation. There's a second generation. There's another generation. There's a grandfather. There's Avi Avos. Now, of course, this is the laws of Tumah, and the laws of Tumah have nothing to do with the laws of Kibud Av V'Em. But the concepts are there. The concept of Tumah is you got to go further, 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 further. You have to know exactly where you stand relative to where something comes from. Klal Yisrael are not like the Umos HaOlam. Klal Yisrael, their desire to go to their source spans all generations. It goes back to Matan Torah. It goes back to the Avos. It goes back to recognizing that we come from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Every neshama is a chilek me'elokai mimal. And this was an antidote to the kitrog of Dan ben Esina, who brought forth the idea that you do look back to the past. Looking back to the past is something spiritual. They can't say it's not. Looking back, recognizing where you come from is a spiritual concept. It's true. Non-Jews have with them this spirituality, but it's limited. Klal Yisrael spirituality allows us to span many generations, and that idea is expressed in the mitzvah of Paraduma. One last thing: it's Parshas. This is Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh Shabbos is a Tammuz. The Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Tammuz is a very holy month. Rosh Chodesh Tammuz is really meant to be Rosh Hashanah. We have Rosh Hashanah coming up in a couple of months, our Aleph Tishrei. But Chazal tell us that Aleph Tammuz was really meant to be the Yom Hadin. Chazal tells us it was meant to be every month was supposed to have a holiday. Pesach, Nisan is a holiday. Pesach. Iyar is a Pesach Sheni. Then comes Chodesh, Sivan is Matan Torah. Shavuos. Then the next holiday is what? Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah was meant to be Aleph Tammuz. How many days do you need to do tshuva? Not 10 days. You really need to do 40 days. Moshe went to Shemayim when he was Mispal for Klai Yisrael, 40 days. What comes 40 days after Rosh Hashanah? The 10th day, Tisha B'Av Ba'erev, the 10th day, the day when the Beis was destroyed, is on the 10th day of Av. The 10th day of Av, when the Beis was destroyed, was burnt, was meant to be Yom Kippur. When is Sukkot? U'lekachtem lechem b'yom harishayim, pre-Eitz Hadar. When is Sukkot? The first day of Elul. That's when Sukkot was meant to be. And then you count Sfira. You count Sfira from the first day Sukkot, second day Sukkot. You count 50 days that takes you to the 20th Shmini Atzeres, which is Bo Bayom, which is exactly comes out. Bo Bayom, because Chazal said we really were supposed to count Sfira. So according to Chazal, the reason why this did not happen, and all the Bo'adim got crunched together, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, all crunched together in one shot, was because of the Chet HaEgel, everything got messed up. It was really meant to span all of these months. And that means Aleph Tammuz was really meant to be Rosh Yom HaDin. So even though we don't celebrate Rosh Hashanah, it's a time of Din. And that's why Tammuz in Halacha begins the Tkuf of Din. Tammuz and Av, the Chormes HaMidrash, the 3 weeks, the Ben HaMetzarim, begins in Chodesh Tammuz. It's a Tkuf of Din because Aleph Tammuz really is Din. Therefore, even though we don't commemorate Rosh Hashanah, but there is some residual din that remains of Rosh Hashanah, and therefore it's a Tkuf already to prepare for Rosh Hashanah. It's also interesting that Tammuz is also the Chodesh of Ruvain. Ruvain, every one of the months corresponds to one of the Shvatim. Tammuz corresponds to Ruvain. Ruvain was meant to be the Bechor. Why did Ruvain lose the Bechor? Ruvain Bechoriata. Koichi v'yoitzim yodi. What happened? Pachas kamayam al toisa. Impetuousness. Klal Yisrael couldn't wait a few minutes. The Moshe Rabbeinu came down on Shivas the Betamus with the Luchos. Only they would have waited just a few minutes. Moshe would have come down with Shemayim with the Luchos. They were too impetuous. Pachas Kamayim, and they lost Tammuz, which was meant to be the first month of the year. The month of the Rosh Hashanah was taken away and was transferred to Tishrei. It's just like Reuven, it has that same midah of Reuven. Reuven was meant to be the Bechor, to be the first, and because of his impetuousness, it was taken away and given to Yosef and to Levi. When Yehuda was given away to those miles were given away to other people. So, but we do have to keep in mind that Talmud already begins at Kufa of the Yemei Hadin of Rosh Hashanah. Have a wonderful Shabbos.